The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello, and welcome to the Lawfare Podcast. I'm Benjamin Wittes. Today, a new national security blog is launching. Called Just Security, it is the first major entrant into the space devoted solely to national security legal questions since we started Lawfare 3 years ago. So I guess in some sense it's our competition. It's also, however, run by people for whom I have the highest regard, including Lawfare's own Steve Vladek and NYU professor Ryan Goodman, on whose article on capture versus killing, Lawfare hosted an extended debate earlier this year. Vladek and Goodman, who will be Just Security's co-editors-in-chief, joined me by conference call to discuss their new project, what Just Security will be focusing on, who is involved, what they aim to achieve, and how it will all differ from Lawfare.
So tell us about the project. What is Just Security?
So Just Security, the idea is that we're going to focus on issues specific to U.S. national security law and policy. Our primary audience are people inside the U.S. government and think tanks who are trying to solve difficult problems. And what we want to do is offer a set of voices that come to those kinds of questions and provide them a bit of a platform so that they can get their ideas out and try to, in a certain sense, problem solve. So that's the main focus in terms of who the audience is and the kinds of the orientation of the project. So even though on our board of editors a number of people are currently in academic positions, the thought is not that this is one of those blogs that is from academics trying to speak to academics. That's not the right audience or way of thinking about what we're up to.
What is?
What is the people who are in practice trying to solve these problems, people on the Hill, people in the executive branch, people in the military, thinking through the trade-offs, and maybe there aren't trade-offs, but realizing that there aren't trade-offs, and some of the kinds of rights questions versus national security or national security long-term versus short-term questions. And that what the group tries to bring is similar in character to Lawfare, the thought that what we offer is legal analysis, punctuated in a certain sense by policy sensibility. But there are definitely other outlets in the Internet for national security policy analysis, but not really anything else like it except for Lawfare that brings in kind of a legal team is a way of thinking about it.
And Steve, who is involved, broadly speaking, in the project? I mean, I know there are actually a lot of individuals involved in it, but how would you describe the group that you've brought together?
Mets fans. No, I mean, I think the it's really, I mean, Ryan said it right. It's a diverse group. We wanted to go for, you know, folks who have actually been in the trenches. So, you know, when you look at our masthead, you see folks like Harold Coe, Marty Lederman, you know, Hina Shamsi, Jamil Jaffer. I mean, we're not just talking about people with government experience or people with policy and litigation experience. We're trying to get a real cross-section, but also not just, you know, folks who have been living inside the Beltway, either literally or at least, you know, professionally for the last 5 years. So someone like, you know, Shahid Fatima, you know, who's going to be giving us a bit of more of an international perspective, Jeremy Waldron, you know, our hope is that we can actually have this conversation at once on a level that is relevant inside the Beltway, but also that, you know, opens the door to more cross-fertilization, to more viewpoints from outside, both, you know, in the United States and overseas, because it's becoming increasingly clear that so many of these problems, you know, really defy easy conventional solutions. It seems like the more voices and the more serious, you know, forward-thinking people we can have in the conversation, the better.
And how would you describe both of your roles in it? I mean, one of the things that people always ask me about Lawfare is sort of to what extent I edit it, to what extent I'm, you know, sort of what my role in it is. What's your role going to be in Just Security?
I mean, I think our hope is to just stir the pot. You know, I think the best we can do is just to sort of bring together a group of people who are going to, you know, take the conversation in directions we could not have predicted and in ways that we could not have anticipated, and then do our best to just participate and facilitate. I mean, we don't have any specific editorial policy. We don't have any, you know, guidelines for what is appropriate content and what is not. I mean, we just want to bring together, you know, people who are going to have interesting and important things to say and let as much of it evolve organically as possible.
So, Ryan, you know, in your initial description of the project, a lot of our listeners and readers would say, hey, we know a project that does all of that. That's Lawfare.
Right.
And in your comments, the thing that you analogized it to at some level explicitly was Lawfare. And I'm interested in how this project is different.
Right. In some ways, it's similar, obviously, and there's, like in Venn diagram, there's a lot of overlap, and then there's a lot that's not. I think part of what is not is part of what Steve described, the kinds of people that we're bringing in. Some are similar in character to the folks on Lawfare, but others are coming from, you know, international experience outside of the United States, but have ideas and knowledge that is directly relevant to thinking through U.S. National security law policy issues. So that's part of it, is to bring in those kinds of voices. The other thought is that the way I've thought of it is, in part, it's as though if somebody were to say, well, there's already the New York Times, why do you need the Washington Post? Or there is already ABC News, why do you need NBC News? The thought is that there are ways in which we each have maybe different networks of, and not networks as TV networks, but networks of contacts and people that we are in communication with. So if we're going to be recruiting talent to engage in these debates, it's great if there are multiple venues out there and different networks out there that bring in different ideas. So that's the thought in large part. And then the other thought is that, you know, the way in which that you guys at Lawfare have been very generous and encouraging of us is the way in which we think similarly, that the way I've described it to other people is that a rising tide lifts all boats. So the thought is that I imagine that over time we'll also engage in discussions with each other, both as colleagues and friends, and that's all for the good, that we'll have a better exchange of ideas, better dynamism with respect to that, but then also we'll probably go in separate ways and treat different issues and come at it from different perspectives.
So one thing you haven't said, which lots of people in describing Just Security casually say routinely, is that this is sort of a progressive movement or left alternative to Lawfare. You're actually being careful not to describe it philosophically, and I'm interested in how you would describe the essential philosophical orientation.
Well, I mean, I think, but, you know, to say that there's an essential philosophical orientation is to suggest that there is an organizing theme to the blog that is substantive. And I think, you know, the key for us is that we don't have one worldview, you know, and so I think it would be very difficult. Indeed, I think most of our, you know, masthead would revolt if we actually tried to suggest that there was one worldview that unites us. I mean, I think part of the thing that has emerged from the national security conversation in the United States in the last, you know, 5-10 years is that even though things are, you know, individual questions, individual topics are often caricatured as the left view versus the right view, you know, that's just way too overly simplistic. And so, you know, I think folks are probably going to look at our masthead and use terms like the progressive or the lefty lawfare, but we don't think of ourselves that way because we think that's unfair to both us and to lawfare. You know, we don't think that the conversation can be so easily bracketed as the view of, quote, the left, unquote, and the view of, quote, the right, unquote, and that, you know, just security is representing one corner and lawfare the other. That presupposes a level of organization that, you know, if you look at who's on our editorial board, you know would be impossible.
You know, when we started Lawfare a few years ago, there was kind of one issue that was so dominating the conversation that it was sort of inevitably what we spent a lot of focal time on, which was the, you know, sort of post-Boumediene habeas stuff. And that morphed over time, and the site morphed with it in the sense that people aren't spending nearly as much time on that, and we've gone through sort of episodes of where drones are really out front and targeted killing is really up front, and episodes now where we're talking a lot about war powers in Syria and the NSA. And I'm curious, when you guys think about what the sort of, you know, what are the set of issues that you're sort of particularly interested in focusing on and that are kind of going to define you over the next, you know, over the first year of your existence?
Well, you know, Ben, I think if there's one structural difference between just security and lawfare, I think it's, you know, we're starting with a larger deck of cards, both when it comes to issues and when it comes to editors. I mean, you know, given Lawfare starting with basically you, Bobby, and Jack, you know, right. I mean, you know, we are, for a host of reasons, coming at this from a very different perspective, which is, you know, with a board of, you know, upwards of, you know, 15. And so I think that the difference for us is going to be that I don't think there will ever be one set of issues that you can really, you know, say is the dominant focus of the blog, because even if in one given week you've got, you know, someone like Jen Daskal and Jennifer Granick, you know, fighting with Orrin Kerr about FISA and NSA surveillance, you know, the same week could see, you know, Harold Koh and Marty Lederman sniping at each other about the war powers. And, you know, a different conversation about, you know, U.S.-European relations when it comes to drone strikes. So, you know, I think one of my fervent hopes for the blog is that there's going to be just a lot of interesting stuff going on at all times, because that's the nature of our field. I mean, the nature of our field is there is no more, you know, one dominant issue meme here. And so I think part of why we are starting with such a, you know, loaded lineup is because we're trying to anticipate the very real likelihood that there will never be one issue that is at the heart of the blog, but rather a handful, a bucket, an ever-evolving set of questions.
Tell us about the sort of organizational project. I mean, one of the things that that flows out of the structural difference that you just described, you know, when we started Lawfare, there were three of us. We had a little website that we could post to, and that was kind of it. And we had no audience. We had no staff. We had no anything. We just three guys that declared ourselves as having a website. You guys have an organization. You have a lot of people, and you're going to have a big launch event on Wednesday, and you have an audience. Even before you launched, you had, you know, 500 plus Twitter followers. You know, how do you go from zero to 60 with a publication that will support, you know, the kind of infrastructure that you've constructed around it?
Well, Ryan does all the work, and I take all the credit. I mean, that's basically the organizing principle. No, I mean, you know, Ben, you're exactly right. But I think part of it is it's partly because of Lawfare. I mean, right? We don't have the luxury that Lawfare had with to sort of start organically and build up. I mean, we really have to come into the market on day one with content that is going to make people think that we're worth reading in addition to Lawfare and what else is out there. And so what that entails is it entails, you know, we've got, you know, a staff that looks to some degree like the masthead of Lawfare today, right? We have, you know, Tom Ernest, who's a great managing editor to keep us all on our toes. You know, we've got Mike Joshi, who's going to be a fantastic communications editor. But, you know, I think part of the challenge for us was knowing that we would have to launch as basically a completed whole, you know, from the get-go in order to, you know, have any chance at at achieving our goals, at sort of playing in the same spaces, being part of the same conversation. And so it's meant a lot of legwork and a lot of organizational work behind the scenes that, you know, I think that folks will never actually see, other than, you know, Ryan and my families, who have not seen much of us. So, you know, I think that's just sort of part of the process.
When we started Lawfare, we didn't give any thought to organizational structure, any of that, for exactly that reason, that we were kind of building it out of nowhere, and we never really thought about it. We have had to think a lot about things like organizational relationships, building an organization, which we, you know, what the relationship with the Brookings Institution is going to be, what the relationship with academic institutions was going to be, if any. And how we were going to fund it all, you know. And you guys had to think through that stuff from the beginning. And I'm curious, what is the organization that's publishing it? What is the relationship with NYU or with AU or with anything else? And you know, how are you paying for it?
Right. Well, the in a sense, the organizational structure is flat. We almost thought that we might describe it as a consortium because it is bringing in individuals from various law schools, various organizations, and the like. But what we decided is that it needs to at least have a kind of a hub. So the hub is at NYU Law School. And that's also kind of where we operate out of in terms of our staff, though, you know, admittedly, when we also were searching for staff, we were searching for the best people, and if they were to be located in D.C., that was going to be fine by us, too. So it's kind of a D.C. – we thought of a D.C. New York presence. And so that's part of it. We also thought about the idea that we would maybe reach out to the different law schools to pitch in, but instead we've just thought that also – if you do that, it comes with too many administrative headaches and difficulties. So we're based at NYU. We have support from NYU. We also have outside funding support as well. So and that's kind of the way in which we think we'll operate. It also gives us a sense of independence. But the idea is that we also have students that are volunteering to pitch in behind the scenes to the site, and the idea there as well is that we want to help them to professionally develop and get opportunities that way, but that there's no reason that they would themselves have to be located at NYU. The thought there as well is that it's trying to spread this to the different places where people are located. And yeah, so that's so it has an very much of an independent identity. It's not like, and from the very beginning we thought, and I thought, we didn't want this to be something that necessarily was www.nyulaw.edu/. Just like so, in a sense, it has a similar kind of affiliation, as far as I can understand, the affiliation of Lawfare.
One of the biggest surprises to me, and when I in running Lawfare, the thing that I least anticipated that has been among the most important things that has happened, is the role that students have played in the site. Which is to say, I didn't give the possibility a moment's consideration until it happened. And when it happened, the contribution that this group of students has made over the years has been just really hard to overstate. And I'm just interested to hear what plans you have. You just said you were going to involve students in it. What are they going to be doing? And you know, what do you see as the role of students in contributing to it?
So the center piece of the blog is definitely its content is the masthead, so the board of editors. That's who will be providing analysis and commentary. So what students are able to do are twofold. One is they can perform in a similar function as research assistants do with their professors. And we also have students who are eager to do that as well by forming professional relationships with some of our board of editors who are not affiliated with an academic institution. And then that's another thing that they can also do with people who guest post. So they can help those people and basically in the background by helping them do research for their contributions. But then we also have vehicles for students to do some other kinds of work. So if you look at the blog, there's a section on called Books We've Read, and there's a descriptive synopsis. And the descriptive synopsis is written by a student, and they get attribution for that. And then after the descriptive synopsis are more critical, analytic, original ideas from board members. So there's a way in which the student is doing work, but it's not as though they're necessarily presenting their own original ideas. The thought is that for something like that, it should be written in a way in which both the author of the book and their critics would both agree is a fairly reasonable reflection of the content of the book. So it's not a book review. That's why we kind of use the terminology of synopsis. So there's content like that they can provide. It's a little bit on the fringes because the core of the blog really is the analysis of pressing national security issues. But that's other ways in which they can do it. You know, when we first started this out, I imagine you guys at Lawfare thought through similar things, which is that students, based on their schedules, aren't really able to help as much with the administrative side of things, just because we need a more reliable staff, in a certain sense, a full-time staff, to be performing those kinds of tasks. So it's not like students on a law journal where they're helping in the production cycle as much as I would maybe ideally have wanted, but it just doesn't, there's just a disconnect there with students being in classes and things like that. So in some ways they get more opportunities to do more substantive things, but it's the kind of research that they otherwise might find themselves doing when they're working for a professor.
And I guess another example of that is, you know, one of the features that we're going to, you know, I think unveil as time goes on is something we're going to call Congress Watch, you know, which is going to be a way of basically not just tracking pending legislation, but also tracking how, you know, members of Congress are voting on national security-related legislation. It's not the most exciting work, to be sure, but we hope that it's something that, you know, can be of use to the community of readers, but also, you know, give our students and the folks who are doing the sort of legwork for us exposure to the sort of the how the sausage gets made in the political process on the issues that we are, you know, in the midst of debating and efforting out.
So, Steve, one oddity of the relationship between Just Security and Lawfare is you, which is to say that you're a longtime contributor to Lawfare, and you're going to be one of the co-editors-in-chief of Just Security. I've been being asked about that a lot, as I'm sure you have. To what extent does this pose a potential problem, and what, how do you feel about wearing two hats with respect to the two sites?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it has a lot to do with my vision of both projects that I don't think it's, you know, a problem at all. I mean, other than for my workload, you know, to my mind, the best way to understand it is I love writing for Lawfare. I think it's a great opportunity to participate in this conversation, you know, insofar as I believe, and I do, that there are, you know, other points of view, other perspectives, other sort of conversations to have, and that Lawfare, try though it might, can't be the only outlet for this conversation, you know, in our community. You know, I don't see any real problem writing for both. I mean, we have plenty of examples in our own consciousness of, you know, folks who are writing for multiple prominent outlets and no one looks at them twice. I think the what makes it weird here is the perception that we're competing with each other, when again, I think the whole, you know, mindset here is that we're not. You know, the problem that I see has nothing to do, you know, is not anything other than having to come up with enough content to write for both. And that's, you know, that's something that I'm blessed with, a field where there's a never-ending stream of interesting things to write about and interesting things to say and interesting provocations from both sides. I mean, my hope is that, you know, I will sort of be no less productive for Lawfare than I've been, you know, in the time that I've been writing for the blog, and that I'll be equally productive for Just Security. We'll see how that works.
Are you going to be productive in terms of teaching and doing academic work? where does the extra time come from? No, I'm joking.
Well, you know, I mean, I do root for sports teams that never go to the playoffs, so it does open up a lot of time in my calendar. But I mean, I think the biggest challenge has nothing to do with either blog. It just has to do with, you know, me sort of not undervaluing and not sort of underperforming my role for either one. And, you know, my hope and my expectation is I'll be able to do that. But, you know, I see Just Security as an amazing opportunity, but also Lawfare as too useful a home for me to leave. And so, you know, whether I can actually walk that fine line and, you know, have my cake and eat it too is something that remains to be seen.
So, Ryan, you guys officially launched today, as in the website is up, but your launch event is on Wednesday. What are you doing to for the kickoff?
So for the kickoff, what we're going to do is host an event in D.C. at the NYU Center in D.C. And the thought is that we wanted to have a reception, in a sense, just to celebrate the beginning of Just Security in that way. But at the same time, the thought is to bring together the kinds of voices and debates that we hope to host at the blog itself. So with a very diverse set of viewpoints, we lined up kind of the dream team of people that we would think would want to discuss a very discrete and particular topic. So the, you know, the title for the panel discussion for that night, that late afternoon that night, is When Reporting is a Crime, National Security and the Press after Snowden and Sterling. And then the lineup of people includes Dahlia Lithwick, Robert Cohen Revere, Lucy Dalglish, Charlie Savage, Gabe Schoenfeld, Steve himself on the panel, and then Ken Weinstein. So the idea is that this is the kind of debate or exchange of ideas that one can hope to find and that we'll host from time to time on the blog itself. And the event is supposed to, in a certain sense, reflect that kind of that part of our identity.
And I'll just add to that. I mean, I think the part of our identity that I hope the event does the most to reflect is that, you know, we are a law and policy blog, but one that's meant to be useful and accessible to people who are not lawyers and policymakers. So, you know, one of our biggest target audiences for the launch event is journalists, and trying to sort of help them make sense of the, you know, ever more complicated world of national security journalism, given the, you know, new DOJ guidelines for dealing with the media in, you know, cases involving leaks of national security information, given the Fourth Circuit Sterling decision with regard to Shield and reporters' privilege, given the, you know, bill that just got out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know, 2 weeks ago with regard to a Shield law, and sort of the larger, deeper atmospherics of national security journalism after, you know, Snowden. Our hope is that this is not just going to be, you know, let's talk about the hard legal questions, but let's also talk about, you know, what reporters actually are doing in these cases, what they can be doing, what they should be doing, you know, what the right answers are to the extent we can have them. And that's why I think you see such a, you know, diverse panel, at least other than me.
Thank you for listening to the Lawfare Podcast, produced in collaboration with the Brookings Institution. Our music was performed by Sophia Yan.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.